Hey guys, hope everybody's doing well. I'm just getting myself set up to chat on the podcast. We have like a yoga room. The feckin' mat keeps coming undone, which pisses me off. That's probably like OCD, but this one corner of the yoga mats, I bought like one, two, three. 3x4. Each one's probably wouldn't be quite a meter, but it's quite a big stretch. It's not like a yoga mat. It's kind of like four yoga mats, but they all attach a bit like a gym floor. And to be honest, it probably does encourage me to do a little bit more yoga, mainly because it's such a great looking setup. It's kind of a sin not to make the most of it. And probably a bit of advice in there that if you can strengthen your setup, whatever it is, if you have a treadmill in the garage, if you could add music or a TV or, you know, use your imagination. I have a monitor sitting in front of me here that I play the PlayStation on, and I think it was about 60 quid, you know, and you get like a Amazon Fire Stick and all of a sudden you have a TV and a, you know, Netflix and whatever will get you through some of the tougher training. But that's what I thought with the whole yoga setup, that instead of rolling around on an uncomfortable floor, that it would encourage me to... God, I sound a wee bit boring today when I'm talking. Well, I thought it would encourage me to do more. And I suppose it has, to be fair. So today, I thought I'd give you a little teaser. I'm writing a book, which I think I've opened up a bit about before, but... To be honest, if I'm really honest, my book's hard to write. if I really got deep in the book, you know, like I probably do with my therapist, needless to say, it would upset some people. It might upset some friends. It might get some friends in trouble. It would very much upset my family. And I feel like... perhaps it's easier to write a book about, you know, trouble with childhood, traumatic experiences, things like this, when you dislike your family. And then it's kind of like you don't really give a shit. Whereas I obviously don't dislike my family. I have accepted the past and I've accepted it wasn't great. But, I mean, I'm not perfect. It's hard to say that out loud. I've abused people. I didn't mean to, but I can see that in, you know, previous relationships when I was younger, 18 to 21, 22, you know, I definitely did. You know, there was probably verbal abuse in a lot of these relationships when I couldn't handle my feelings. I threw out insulting words, you know, like they were fucking midget gems at the cinema. I had no issue sharing them, both throw them out, and that's mean, that's not nice. Now, I understand perhaps why I behaved in certain ways, but look, the reason it's hard to, you know, I accept, my childhood was pretty fucked up, if I'm honest. Probably like a, if it's a scale of 10 out of 10, it might have been like a... I actually don't know, 6, 7. It was pretty fucked up. There's definitely things I mentioned to the psychiatrist that knocks me back a bit when I remember that, you know, shit, that actually happened. Wow. And so I feel like that's a book that would be a wonderful book, but I'm trying to, in writing a book, I'm trying to allow a book to make an impact. And so actually sometimes to make an impact, you don't have to like, you can tell the truth, but you don't have to like spell it out. And so it can be less harmful. You can say I had a troubled upbringing and then, you know, somebody else with a troubled upbringing can think, okay, I can relate to that. You know, I had a troubled upbringing, and it's up to that individual to decide what defines a troubled upbringing. I don't need to start calling people out or anything like that. That's not the purpose. The only reason I would write a book is if I thought by writing it, it could help other people. Showing weaknesses, weaknesses within myself, weaknesses within, you know, perhaps the upbringing, weaknesses in then how I've conducted myself in life since the upbringing. That's probably some of the really more important stuff. Ways that you don't let bad things that have happened to you then impact your life in negative ways, I suppose, moving forward. So look, I guess I'm writing a book. The book's going to be a bit different. It's going to be a training journal in this entire build up to Houston, starting with, you know, when I flew to Flagstaff, and then the probably quite cool thing, I think the cool thing about the book will be that I journal a lot about I guess the psychological struggles that I deal with on a daily basis. And I say daily because I'm telling you, I've come to the realization that I literally deal with this every day. And I deal with what I deal with is a lot different from, let's say, like a drug addict or an alcoholic, but it's essentially the same. It's the same kind of feeling that I would imagine a drug addict or alcoholic wakes up in the morning and what they think of is, you know, their next drink or the next time they're gonna, you know, use drugs. And with me, it's more I wake up and think, you know, how could I change the plan? You know, could I change location? Should I change location? Should I go home for Christmas? Should I stay? Should I just stay in Flagstaff? What about the training? Could I change the training? That's an addiction in itself, change. So the book's going to be how to train like a professional with a mind that, you know, wants to fuck things up. And I'm just going to read little bits of it. And I'm kind of reading this live. So, and I'll not... Oh, man, Courtney's back. And I'll not, like, edit or tweak or... I'll just, you know, roll with it, I suppose. And then we'll decide if it sounded good or not. But this is quite a good test because I'm doing it live. I don't really want things to... If at this point I already need to edit loads, then it's probably not a great book. So it starts, Stephen Scullion. I'm a simple man that loves to live a complex life. And I quite like that because I do see myself as quite a simple man. However, I have a way of trying to make things complex. You know, I don't just like to live the simple life that perhaps I crave. So I'm a simple man that loves to live a complex life. If chaos and drama are a constant in your life, it's likely you love it and it's likely you crave it, need it, so to speak. And it's becoming pretty clear to me that I love a little chaos or drama. I love the adrenaline it brings to my day, the rush of excitement, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but all the same, the rush of excitement that it brings to the table. I take that every day of the week over this simple life that simply seems so boring and mundane to me. The problem for me, if I want to take myself seriously and my potential, then I need to take a step back from drama, chaos, and allow the simple life to be enough for me. This is a great opportunity to say, you can read the stories within this book and judge me, relate to them, but the purpose of this book is to highlight that if I can make this dream possible, and that if I have continued to turn my shit around and figure things out, then as far as I'm concerned, anybody can. I've woken up in a holding cell, having fought the night before and got in trouble with the law. I've been beaten up pretty bad, nose broke a few times, bottles broken over my head and other places, and I've drunk myself into absolute terrible states. Been picked up on the side of the road so drunk a nurse had to take me home. I was a scared, silly and insecure kid who luckily was given one really fucking good skill and talent, being able to run. But my head was always the biggest problem. Figure out the head, let the rest fall into place. So that's kind of just like a, I guess like a little intro. And I don't need to read too much more. And I'm rereading these things because, yeah, it's just quite funny. Not funny to me, but like to go back and reread is interesting because now I've probably done about, 4 weeks, I think, in Flagstaff. So, this started out as maybe 12 weeks to go to Houston, and, now it's 8. So, but I say here, I would boast more about sticking to a plan for 12 weeks than I would if I ran 2:06 for a marathon. It would mean more to me that I was able and capable to not change the plan or act impulsively or emotional. And what's interesting is I genuinely mean that. I feel like the possibility of me running 206 is greater than the possibility of me sticking to a plan. I just do not stick to plans, like, period. And it's a bit like, that's probably a bit like an alcoholic saying, the longest I've gone is a day without alcohol, or the longest I've gone is a week, and if Courtney and Haas, who I stay with in Flagstaff, like, when if they go away for probably like a week or two on holiday, they'd probably make bets that I'd be gone before they get back. Because and that would be the same as if, you left an alcoholic and you left five bottles of whiskey in the cupboard, you'd probably imagine that that whiskey would be gone by the time you get back. And so it's different, but it's the same, So I have here, it says prologue, and it says, "To Scully, just stay in fucking Flagstaff for 12 weeks. Take care of your training. Don't complicate it. Don't change it. And go to Houston and run faster than any other Irishman ever has, including yourself. Fuck if for once in your life you stick to a fucking plan, don't be surprised if you exceed all expectations and win the fucking thing." Scully's logical brain. That's quite good. God, I'm more excited about this than you guys probably are. So I'm probably gonna yeah, I'll skip little things. This is Scully in 2021. It hasn't been that easy, and it's the first year in what, 4 to 5 years that have gone backwards. But not only have I gone backwards, I ran my slowest marathon in 5 years and my slowest ever. Sad face emoji. But in fairness, one marathon was the Tokyo Olympics with raging temperatures, high humidity, which didn't exactly give the best chance, and the next was Boston Marathon. Had I sprinkled in some fucking hill training into my complex build-up, I actually might have ran all right. Truth is, I came off the Tokyo Olympics, had 10 or so weeks to Boston, and perhaps rushed a build-up and neglected the right kind of training. If I was being really honest with myself, then I'd tell you the mistake was made in December 2020 when I told my coach at the time, Rob, "Don't worry, bud, I'll take it from here. Thanks a lot for helping me run faster than I've ever ran before, but being a big silly idiot who knows best, I'll keep the ball rolling. And what I'm thinking would be fantastic would be a DNF in Tokyo and a 2:22 at Boston." Now, bear in mind, Rob had just helped me train for 61:08 half marathon and 2:09. I would say, who the fuck knows why I decided to ditch Rob. But I know fine well, Scully loves chaos and drama. I love to rip up the sheet of paper that reads, "Hey, this is working. If we keep doing this, we might actually achieve some success and some really great results." I love to rip that sheet of paper up, throw it in the bin, and burn the fucker. I probably get a kick out of all of 2 hours, and then I have to plan for myself. And if life didn't repeat itself, I did the same with a coach and one of my best friends, an agent, in 2018. There's no excuses in this world, so it's important to figure your shit out. So that's like chapter one. And then I go on to different things. But then it's quite simple stuff, like 11 weeks to Houston. Week one, and I'm in Flagstaff, Arizona. It wasn't planned, but I also didn't exactly have a date to come over here. I had dabbled with the idea of running Irish senior cross country, which may have qualified me for Euro cross country in Dublin. A fucking cool idea from the big man in my brain called the Ideas Man. But to be honest, having just ran my slowest marathon in my career, I need to focus on fixing that. Monday AM, 8 miles easy, 7:14 per mile, and 5 times 15 second fast hills. Haas had an early meeting and so we ran on Woody. I felt pretty good and did most of the chatting on the run. Haas was probably hurting and so he didn't respond much. I definitely know he was hurting when we crept under 7 minute per mile. I changed into some flats and ran five hills, which I think helps prime my legs for Tuesday's session. So look, I'm going to leave it at that. That's about as much as I'm giving away. I guess there's different occasions where now over the next couple of weeks, in fact, let me see if I can find one in week one. Yeah, I talk about my session with the therapist. Yeah, I genuinely speaking, probably two or three times a week, speak about some way, shape, or form where I attempt to change the plan. Went to watch Katie do speed drills and had a bit of a meltdown, which ended in a pretty big argument. Me getting a taxi home, then I searched for an Airbnb, maybe wanting to move into a new place. Then I decided it would be cheaper to fly home, searched American Airlines for about 20 minutes for different options, flying to Belfast, Dublin, London, etc. Then I got worried Katie wasn't back yet, so I planned to go find her, and as I left the house, she was parked out front. Needless to say, I didn't book a flight or a new Airbnb. So these are the little, I guess, little like life moments that are going to be thrown in there. And the reason I probably decided on the podcast to even share is because we've kind of got like 4 weeks down the line and I'm still fucking talking about, you know, it's been 4 weeks and I'm still talking about whether or not I'll go home for Christmas or whether I'll stay in Flagstaff. And like, you know, it's getting a bit old even to me. And, you know, not that it's going to like, look, all the book is honesty. The book is just honesty. So look, if it's boring as fuck because every day I wake up and I book a flight home and then an hour later I cancel it, well then it's a boring book, you know. And obviously that it's not quite that amount, but there's certainly a lot of ideas, a lot of scheming, a lot of, you know, me wanting to make changes, etc., etc. And I guess eventually today I realized it's about more than Houston at this point. You know, it's really got to a point where it's more than Houston. This like break in the cycle, and I say here, I'm just like an addict. I will claw and justify all different reasons to get what I want. And something I've gotten very good at is making my marathon build-ups less optimum due to unnecessary training, travel, races, etc. Impulsive decisions. And I want to see if a simple, clean build-up will work for Houston. I plan to stem Flagstaff right through until the marathon. This will be optimum for me, and it will allow me to focus on the important factors which will impact the result at Houston: training and clean, simple living. Most of all, I want to break the pattern of Stephen Scullion allowing impulses to pull me away from the optimum plan, and I want to show myself I can do it. For me and for everybody who draws strength from knowing it's hard for me, but I do it anyway. So I don't know if Yuzel, I really don't know if Yuzel appreciate, I guess, how hard this is for me. Like, not right now. This is a fucking gift. I'm sitting on a bed and talking on the podcast. But it's more like the 14th of December, for example, it'll be a really tough day for me. That's the day I would have flew. That would have been the first potential see ya. But then I have a feeling every day after that will, you know, gradually get better. And I'll get stronger within myself, knowing that I've stuck to it and I've stuck to the plan. Haas, Courtney, everybody leaves, I think, on the 17th of December. So 17th of December until probably the 27th is going to be fucking brutal. It'll be nice probably having the house to myself. And that has a relaxing element to me. And I'll enjoy that. But fuck me, that laptop will probably get a lot of activity looking and scheming. And, you know, there'll be this pull, this fucking pull trying to pull me home. And honestly, the mad thing is I don't even know. I wrote here, I don't know why I have this yearning to leave Flagstaff or leave USA. If I'm honest, I don't even get excited about the prospect to go to Belfast. Poor weather, distractions all over the festivities, etc., etc. The list would go on. And I can tell you all, if I was in Belfast right now and the race was in Europe, I'd likely be considering an altitude camp in Flagstaff to help the race. And I'd be weighing up, would the travel hinder the performance? But of course, the travel would be in the opposite direction. Honestly, and then I go on to say I'm sick and I'm just like any other addict. I will spin it in all different kinds of ways just to get that bottle of booze. But for me, it's not the booze. It's the dopamine and excitement I get from making new plans, traveling, and setting myself up in a new place, etc. I get bored with simple living, and I want to help that. If I can pull this off, you guys won't actually know the severity of what I've achieved, but I will. I'll understand how much strength and courage it took. So there you go. Look, to me, this is like, it's funny because if someone told me they wanted to give up smoking, I'd probably be a bit like naive. And you know, say, well, you know, why don't you go for it? What's stopping you? And I wouldn't really understand how difficult a task that is because I've never had to. But, you know, even taking Houston away, I'm in a position right now where I have to give up this bad habit. I have this bad habit of, I'm just not a reliable person. People can't rely on me because, you know, I could say to Haas, oh, don't worry, when you're away in Hawaii, I'll feed your fish. Haas doesn't have fish. And Haas would look at me and be like, Scully, I love you, mate, but like, you could be gone tomorrow. In fact, you could be in fucking Hawaii with us tomorrow for all we know. So, you know, I have these habits that I have a habit of just, yeah, not being reliable because, you know, Haas is so used to, he leaves the house for 10 minutes and then when he comes back I'm fucking gone. I've managed to pack a bag and abandon ship. So look, I need to I really need to sort my shit out. This is about more than Houston. This is much, much bigger than Houston. This is going to help Houston, but this is much, much bigger. This is me giving up something that I don't know if addicted is the right word, but you know, it's a bad habit. And when I told the therapist, I told him, if I can do this, it literally means I can run 206. It doesn't mean I'll run it in Houston because weather, other factors, etc., etc. But if I can stick to a plan, that was the only thing stopping me from getting to that full potential. And I know at the end of the day, you learn and learn over your career what works, what doesn't. And by learning all that, it allows you to map out these really, you know, pretty crystal clear plans that if you stick to it, you'll fucking do well. And unfortunately for me, I have all that knowledge and I can write the plan. And with people like Rob, I can make it bulletproof. But the problem with me is I don't fucking stick to it. So it's kind of irrelevant that you have all that knowledge. It's just wasted. And so that's pretty much where we're at. So I don't know if this book will be boring because it might be repetitive. I don't know if it'll be eye-opening to both from a, you know, a training perspective to go through details like heart rate and lactate and see the progression of that. You know, to see that maybe some sessions on paper looked really sexy but felt really shit, or to really get an insight into the daily struggles of my wonderful brain that loves it. You know, I think there's going to be different angles here that, you know, you guys might, you know, really appreciate. And I guess no matter what happens at Houston, you know, if I can stick to the logical plan, then it's a victory in itself. And that's, you know, that's part of the conversation with the therapist, that when you get on that plane with 2 days to go, like, how's that gonna feel, you know, knowing that you did it, you finally, you know, it's as if like you're given an opportunity where if you could just not smoke a cigarette, you're trying to give up smoking, and you could, you know, all you have to do is for 8 weeks, don't smoke a cigarette. And And then at the end of 8 weeks, you do it. And it's as if when you get on that flight that I'll get on to go to this race, it's as if someone's telling you on that flight, you did it. You know, that's it. If you want now, you can give up smoking. Or in my case, you can choose to use this as an experience that you now know in future. Hey, well, I did it for Houston, so I can do it again. I've showed myself I can do it, so I can do it again. And that's really powerful in life. So, you know, that's where we're at. Training this week is easy. So it's easier. It's an easy week. So just once a day. Today was 4 miles. I have to keep the heart rate under under 162, 163. And I'm doing 4 miles at 7,000 feet of altitude. It's just never fucking easy. So it was comfortable. The lactate was in a good place and the speed was okay. I'd like the speed to be maybe 5 seconds per mile faster. And I think it'll get there. So I think when I repeat something like today in 4 weeks' time, I'm going to see that things have moved on a little bit again. And then there's another 4 weeks to the race and hopefully they move on or I maintain that in that last stretch. So I'm not really surprised marathon effort isn't in a great place. And the reason I say that is because I've put a lot of work into, you know, improving anaerobic threshold, which I've talked about quite extensively. And that's half marathon, but I haven't really, there's a couple of sessions you start to do pace change sessions, you know, where you do 20 by K, K on, K float, maybe 2K on, 1K float, etc., etc. And they help to bring, your marathon pace closer to your half marathon pace. And I think at the minute there's going to be quite a big gap between my two paces. And the more I start to integrate some marathon type pace stuff, and it won't be loads of it, but it'll be enough to help that process, and then enough to practice the rhythm of marathon pace. And that's the you know, the sessions I'm going to do at sea level. The first one I do is this Saturday, 12 miles, and I'm really hoping that's around 4:55, but that might be ambitious, so maybe 4:55 to 5, even though it upsets me to have to say that, because I really want it to be 4:50 to 4:55, but actually that's where it'll probably be, or hopefully would be, you know, perhaps not even the next time in 4 weeks, but, you know, race day. So I've still 8 weeks to get it to there, but, you know, I just love it to be like that this Saturday because, well, I'm greedy. But look, there's not much to report. Easy weeks are important. I still Normatec. I'm guilty of probably starving myself on an easy week. And so I've noticed that even though I've had a couple of easy days, my heart rate variability hasn't really came up. And that's probably because, you know, nutrition side of things, I'm being a wee bit greedy, and actually greedy in the opposite way, but greedy in that I'm using an easy week to focus on eating less carbs rather than really eating plenty and restoring the balance, I suppose you could say. So look, there's always things you can work on. So going to be big dinner tonight, big carb dinner. Last night was just meat and veg. So that's where you need to be careful. You know, you only get one body. And so if on race day, you know, you're tired or fatigued or all the training was for nothing. So it's really hard to get sucked into the traps of seeing really skinny runners. And I'm probably really skinny. You guys probably look at me and think I'm really skinny. And then I look at the Africans and think they're really skinny and light. And but look, you got to figure out what works good for you. And you know, I ran 209 and 61.08 for a half. I think weighing 69 kilograms. Nothing crazy, but you know, there's periods in my career when I'm not racing that well that I have this ambition to get to 65, 66. And it's what the fuck are you talking about? You know, it's not that 3 kilograms isn't why you didn't run 205. You didn't run 205 because you're a dick and you always change the plan. You fucking rocket. So look, there's, like I say, there's plenty to work on. yoga's been really important to me, meditation has been really important to me, and look, that's probably an area I'd love to speak about. Like, really, you guys should really start adapting some meditating. It seems a bit, you know, cheesy at first, and but it really does a great job of helping you probably just learn not to chase your thoughts around your head, just to let some thoughts come and go. It teaches you a real, it's just good brain practice of about awareness of brain activity, you know, what it's telling you, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, from a, you know, mental health like capacity or perspective. And I use that most nights, and look, I can tell you there's no fucking flights booked at night time, because I'm just in a real calm and you know, relaxed space. And and it's really something that I would love you guys to, you know, start doing, start practicing. And I do 10 minutes of stretching, 10 minutes of yoga, if that, sometimes 8 minutes. And I just have a little routine I do. And then I come over to the bed in the, like the yoga room. And I just listen to sometimes a 10-minute session, sometimes a 15-minute session. And yeah, it's just really nice to kick back, really nice to, and then there's a lot of, sometimes, like, you know, the meditation is visualization, and that's when I get excited about things like Houston, and if I'd been, you know, halfway tempted during the day to, you know, change the plan or anything like this, then all of a sudden it's like, well, hey, you know, take a deep breath, calm things down, think of a big event that you might have coming up, you know, visualize how that might go, visualize how you'd like it to go. And so I'm laying there thinking, fuck, you know, if I could really stick to this plan, and then I can see myself running with power, you know, just power in my stride, happiness on my face, and just fucking powering towards my goals. And that probably makes it all worth it then. But look, there's all different reasons to meditate and you know, why it's good for you. But look, it's really, really been helping me. So, you know, if you do have a bit of brain activity that you'd like to understand or explore a little bit, it's well worth it. And I just recognize now, I wake up, I fucking see myself going for the laptop. I know what I'm about to do, look up plans, blah, blah, blah. And some days I just fucking think, well, what, go for it, like, do your worst. And I understand that, look, as long as I'm still sat here, you know, everything's okay. I'm not gonna scold myself for, you know, changing a plan and then I come back to it and hit, what is it, command Z, undo, and or, you know, booking something and then knowing I have 24 hours to cancel it for a free refund. Or look, there's silly things goes on, but at the end of the day, I'm really trying. So yeah, I won't be too hard on myself, but you know, this is a good week. Saturday, I'll do another podcast after Saturday, and you know, that's going to give a little insight into marathon pace. But I have a feeling it'll be between 4:55 and 5 minutes right now, so, or maybe 5 to 5:05. But I think more likely 4:55 to 5. But fuck, big day Saturday, right, guys? Look, I'm gonna let you go. I do appreciate you listening, and I do need to do some yoga. I keep talking about it, but I should do some yoga. And then, yeah, big dinner tonight and focus on hydration. And I just sleep so good at altitude. We're in bed every night, 8:30. Pretty much 8:30, and then don't get up to about 7:30. But I suppose if I'm going to constantly change the plans and fly places and change sessions, might as well just fucking go to bed whatever time I want and then stick to the plan. That would probably be more effective. Right. Appreciate you all listening. Bye-bye.